Carrie, I was really taken with the article in the Murray Ledger and Times that Austin Ramsey wrote about the Salvation Army bell ringers being at the shopping center's weekends in December. And for me, the Salvation Army in Murray is somewhat invisible except at bell ringing time. What goes on? What does the Salvation Army provide in Murray?
The Salvation Army locally is what we call a service unit. And that's made up of individuals, volunteers from different agencies that help administrate the money that comes through at Christmas time. And then we also receive donations through the mail. And there's also wider, what we call mail appeals throughout the state for which we can receive money from time to time. And so we just function as a group of volunteers seeking to meet various needs. Some of those needs can be pretty diverse. We assist with Needline and helping Tona Casey with her yearly budget and providing the needs that arise there, and that can be anywhere from utilities to prescriptions and matters such as that. We've worked with Tona and the Community Thanksgiving Service and helping provide meat for them and for Christmas baskets at different times. We work with Center for Accessible Living. For a number of years, we've helped provide money for grab bars for the handicapped and helped in building ramps or providing temporary ramps. And then we also work with some of the family resource centers and Callaway Head Start, Murray Head Start, and family resource centers in the public schools and providing for needs there. So there's a variety of things that we do that we just kind of do behind the scenes. We don't trumpet it too loud, but a lot of the people who are on the receiving end know where the money comes from.
It's stealth humanitarianism.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, at this point in December, if you are still needing volunteers for bell ringing.
We do. We have openings this Saturday, and we have openings actually next weekend and Monday and Tuesday before Christmas. That'll be our last 5 dates, I would say. People are more than welcome to give me a call at my home number, and that is 753-7265. And leave me a message, and I'll get back to them in the evenings and see when we could schedule them for a slot.
What is the commitment time-wise?
It's really whatever people want to ring. Most people will ring 1 to 2 hours, depending upon their age and their health, of course. But most individuals ring that amount of time. And we also have groups, church groups, civic groups, college student organizations that have rung for us over the years. And so I'd say on average, most people ring about 2 hours.
Where are they located?
This year, we're ringing at Walmart, and that's been a staple for us for a good 20 years. We do have some limited hours at Walgreens, because that can be also a pretty busy avenue on the evenings and on the weekends.
Tell me the story of the beginning of the bell ringers.
As I understand it, Kate, the whole idea for the kettle started with a group of Salvation Army individuals out in San Francisco. And it was around Thanksgiving or the Christmas season. They were looking to feed a number of people who didn't have their resources to buy food. And one of the officers came up with the idea of using one of their kettles that they would use to cook meals in and utilize that kettle as a means of soliciting donations. And so that goes back just about to the turn of the century or just before. And of course now for many people the kettle is synonymous with Christmas and giving to the needs of their community. And that's one thing we like to emphasize, that the money that's given here stays here in the county. We work very hard to meet the local needs that arise and are presented to us.
In your life as chaplain, how does the month of December vary from other months for you? Is there any difference to what people need from you this month?
As a chaplain, I would not say there are big contrasts to that. I know people are lonely, need a sounding board, need emotional or spiritual support regardless of the month that they're in. maybe the slight difference to that is that for holidays, during the holidays, people may feel that a little bit more intently, especially if they are a distance from family. We live in such a transient society nowadays that it's not unusual for families to have kids all over the U.S., and maybe the only time they see them is Thanksgiving or Christmas season, the once or twice a year that they're able to come in. So when those visits don't happen, I think it does impact people a little bit more, especially as they get older, because our families are really our most important support system.
Carrie, I know that you host a grief support group, and I'm wondering if you'd speak a little bit about how people can help people who are grieving.
Okay. One of the most important things that we can do when we have a friend or a family member that's grieving is simply allow them to talk about the emotions that come, what they miss most about that person, and just be a sounding board for that individual. In no way, shape, or form can one person necessarily fix a person that's grieving, because it's a process. Just like we go through a physical surgery for something that's wrong with our body, there's an element there of recovery. And the same is true for grievers. Just like people who have a hip replacement or knee replacement have to go through physical rehab to regain the use of that replacement area, that joint, people have to go through a period of recovery in working through the issues that they did not have an opportunity to complete with that loved one. I find that people that grieve usually grieve for the primary reason of what they didn't get a chance to do or say was someone that they had a close bond with, either because the death took place unexpectedly or the dying process did not allow them to fully communicate what those issues and concerns were. So I would tell people the first thing and the most important thing is allowing people simply to talk about their loved one and affirm, you know, the relationship that they had with that person, that it was important.
I assume because you choose the vocation that you know how to recharge your batteries or you already have some inner source. But as a chaplain, how do you keep yourself recharged?
I think the most important thing for chaplains is knowing their emotional limits. A chaplain, and this could be said true for many community ministers in the area as well, a chaplain only has so much emotional and physical energy. And you do reach a point where you know that in order to serve the next person, to show compassion to the next person the best, you do have to limit how much you do every day, because you only have so much to give of yourself. And it's like I tell caregivers of patients, spouses taking care of husbands or wives, or children taking care of aging parents, you really only take as good a care of somebody else as you take of yourself. And so I work hard at limiting the hours that I put in every day. I usually try to do some physical exercise 3 or 4 times a week. And then when it's appropriate and necessary, you know, I look to other staff to talk to. And especially if I'm running into difficult situations, just as a way to unwind and express. If I do run into situations that I'm just not comfortable with or feel like I need additional support with. So it's important for a chaplain not to be an island. I'm not the wherewithal to meet every need. And so we try to have an interdisciplinary approach in helping people meet their needs. I work very closely with community ministers and getting them involved with their patients when patients express that. So we try to take a very balanced approach in involving others while at the same time giving ourselves appropriate rest and exercise.
Thank you so much for speaking with me.
All right, Kate. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to publicize a little bit about what Salvation Army does here in Murray. And encourage people to call if they'd like to take part in the bell ringing this year.
Good deal.